I'd love to say I got into this for some noble cause, like I really enjoyed cultural exchanges or something like that. But no, sadly, it was really all about money at the time.
To share this week's episode of Girl Gone Frugal Again. It is actually a show that I originally shared on my other podcast, Square State, which is about all things Colorado, but I digress. Today I'm speaking with James Carlson about how to become an Airbnb host. He's made a ton of money doing this. He was able to purchase investment properties as well as his primary home, a down payment, and just clean up a lot of debt using Airbnb as a way to make money. I would like to mention that there's both general information as well as Denver specific information, but I want you to listen to the entire show because I think that regardless of where you are in the US or abroad, this information is really helpful to those of you who are thinking about this. You will then be aware of the fact that a lot of areas are putting in regulations to regulate the industry and make sure that you're a part of the regulatory process, meaning if you need special licensing, things like that, that you're doing the things that you need to do so that you're in compliance and that you can keep making money and don't have problems. Also, there's a little bit of background noise during the show. I was actually in the mountains in a gorgeous, gorgeous hostel that I stayed in, but then the mountain caught on fire. Not the mountain that we were physically on, but across the way, like it's a long story, but so people were looking at the mountain that was on fire. So you can hear people kind of walking past me to observe this. So I do apologize for some of that background noise, but it's a great episode. Listen to it. Think about it. If you want to make some money as an Airbnb host, this is the episode for you. Hey everybody, welcome, your host, Michelle Jackson. And I am really excited to speak to today's guest about all things Airbnb. There is a huge opportunity in the sharing economy, whether it is working with Lyft, Uber, Airbnb, and the list goes on. It seems like there's something new every day. My guest has done very well doing Airbnb, and I thought I'd have him come and speak with me and share his wisdom with the listeners about how he's done well doing Airbnb. Some of the things you kind of have to consider and think about before you dive in, and some of the special issues that people will face if they decide to pursue a career in Airbnb hosting. Hi, James. Welcome and introduce yourself.
Hi, Michelle. How you doing? Good. Yeah, my name is James. I work at an appropriately named real estate company called James Carlson Real Estate. That is my place. I work with buyers, sellers, investors of all kind, but really my niche is trying to find people homes that are legally allowed to be rented out short term on Airbnb and other platforms like that, VRBO. And yeah, I just kind of tried to craft myself as the Airbnb guy here in Denver. Go to all the meetings where that people are talking about how to implement the new law. I teach a bunch of classes about Airbnb, and I just kind of love it. I think there's a lot of opportunity on both sides as a host and a guest. Just kind of like sharing my knowledge about it. And it's always nice to talk to somebody else who's interested in it because I think my wife gets tired of hearing me talk about it. So
I will geek out about this because I like making money. And I actually have more than one project. So listeners, when I met James, I was there for a specific reason. I actually run two different podcasts that this relates to. One is a podcast about all things Colorado, Square State. The other one, Girl Gone Frugal Again, which is for single women who
who are getting their money together. And I have a series that I'm doing about how to make more money. And I wanted to kind of repurpose this content on both shows so that people could learn about it. I'll be sharing this episode actually on two of my shows because I think it's really relevant and helpful. So one of the things I was wondering about is, how on earth did you get into this? And why is this, why? Like, when did you get into this? Why? Was it easy?
I'd love to say I got into this for some noble cause, like I really enjoyed cultural exchanges or something like that. But no, sadly, it was really all about money at the time. So maybe about 5 years ago, working as a journalist, that's my background.
Oh, and I had no idea.
Yeah. Spent 10 years covering covering politics, covering cops and courts. And
wow.
I'm that guy walking around with a pad of paper. Unfortunately, journalism does not make a bunch of money. Anyway, I was poor and living in what is affectionately called a basement apartment.
Oh, God.
Anyway, yeah, no.
Are you serious about the basement apartment? Because I've had more than one friend, including myself, who have resided in such a place.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, totally. Yeah, the garden level. Yes. Was my friend for a long time.
Oh, yes. It's my friend now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I want to buy a new place next will not year. Talk so, to you. No, but it's – so there you go.
Oh, well, a garden level is better than a high rise somewhere else. So. So anyway, my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, started renting out her place. And I thought, what the heck? I mean, I can't imagine anyone's going to want this dungeon place. But I put it up there and was just shocked at the demand. I mean, it was through the roof for this tiny dungeon apartment with very bad light.
What neighborhood was that
at in? Some point, Capitol Hill.
Oh.
So as we may or may not talk about, I mean, location is everything, of course. Oh, yeah. So that certainly helped. But at some point, I was in a bit of some different debt, and I thought, man, the demand is through the roof here, and I just had this wild idea to go out and lease a bunch of other apartments as if I was going to rent there. And I did that. I signed leases at three other apartments, and got a U-Haul truck, drove down to IKEA, maxed out credit card, and just stocked these places, furnished them up, and just started renting them out full time.
Cheeky.
And yeah, I know. I got kicked out of more than one eventually, but I don't. And now, for all your listeners, I would not recommend going around your landlord. And now that I actually have rentals, I would never allow that, and I make sure people know that. So I'm a bit of a hypocrite, but that's how I got into it. I mean, we made a ton of money, my wife and I, and ended up being able to like pay down some debt. She got a car out of it. We got a down payment for our primary residence and enough actually to buy an investment property eventually too.
Wow.
So it was pretty great. That's how I got into it.
What was the trajectory in terms of time? Like, how long did it take from when you kind of randomly discovered this thing to down payment on your primary residence and an investment property? Was that like 5-6 years?
Or? Yeah, right. Yeah, so I make it sound very quick, but it was really two years, I'd say.
That is quick.
So I had, I mean, it really kind of changed my life and continues to. I mean, it's led to everything great that's going on right now. So when we were doing it, we only did them from like spring, early spring until late fall, because the demand just drops off the roof and drops off the cliff in November.
Okay.
So we did it once 1 year. I rented a bunch of places, furnished them up. Once November came around, I just stopped my leases and held like basically a fire sale. Everyone came on like one day and just bought up all the crap we'd bought from IKEA.
This story is funnier than I thought it would be.
Yeah, no, good. I'm glad to hear, because that's the best I got. This is my top humor here. So, yeah, we did that 2 years in a row. So then, like, the next spring came around, and we went and re-rented some other places. So I hope that none of my ex-landlords are listening right now.
They're not. They have no idea about me yet. So, I want to talk about, like, were you a user of Airbnb prior to diving into this business model? And if not, could you talk about how you gained the experience of being a guest and a host? Like, what makes a good guest and what makes a good host, and how were you able to leverage that? Because that's a lot of money.
Did not know what I was doing at first, for sure. I'd never been a guest before. I'd never really even heard of Airbnb before my wife brought it up to me. So it was just a lot of learning, having a lot of people contact me and say, hey, you know, you really need to clean this or that, or what would have been nice was to have an extra couple pillows, or, you know, this or that. So it was just kind of like having bumper lanes on, you know, and occasionally I'd stray one way and some guest would tell me, no, that's not how you should do it. But to be fair, to be honest, I guess I also think I'm kind of anal about certain things. And I think I had a pretty good sense of what customers would like.
Right.
My wife always jokes to me that I like to write love letters to all our guests. So I tend to spend a lot of time thinking about what they want and how I can help them. We did become guests eventually, and we've stayed everywhere around the country, around the world. We used it actually on our honeymoon too. So
what makes a good host? Really, like, kind of give us the A through Z or A through D of what makes a good host. When you're a guest and you go in a place, what are you looking for? Just bare minimum.
Cleanliness, number one. The place better be freaking clean. And clean like you've never cleaned your place before. I mean, it's got to be hotel quality, really. And I think that's what people expect nowadays. So you've got to – I always talk about this in one of my classes. There's some terrible commercial out there for Febreze where, like, a mother walks into her son's apartment or condo and, like, him and his friends are just playing video games. They don't notice anything. But the mom, all she sees is a life-size gym sock, you know, emitting this green fume. And the tagline is something like, you become nose blind to things. And I think that people become pretty blind to what's dirty and what's not in their place. So you really got to think outside of the box. You got to clean the baseboards and all that stuff. So it's got to be clean. I think, like, you should have a couple. You should try to make it feel a little bit like a spa or a hotel. You know, I'd always roll up my towels and make a little pyramid on the bed with them. I used to have like a six pack ready for people.
Oh, wow.
Of like local beer. But then my wife put the kibosh on that. As I said, we had different philosophies around how much love to show our guests.
But, she did.
Yeah, rightfully so, maybe. I mean, that's $10 of profit lost on a good six-pack. So.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry, guests, you're not getting that anymore. Yeah, I mean, the cleanliness really is it, I think. You should have coffee, and I think outside of what the actual space looks like, being responsive is of the utmost importance because they're coming from out of town and they don't have concierge service, they don't have a guest service, so you are it, and if something goes wrong, they need to be able to get a hold of you. So that's be clean, be responsive. That's kind of what, you know, that's really where everything starts for me. And then there, you know, branches off.
How did you decide on the pricing? So I'm sitting here, I'm hearing all this that actually makes sense. But then I'm like, well, let's talk money. So there's the investment in keeping your place clean. Maybe you have someone come in to clean. Maybe you do it yourself. You're buying cleaning materials, bedding, stuff like that. So how much is the cost in terms of output, and how much is the cost in terms, and how much are you getting in return? Like, what's your ROI? How do you figure out what to ask your guests, what to charge your guests nightly? And then we'll kind of segue into talking about Denver specific issues.
Sure. So you're asking, really, how do you set your price? How do you set that base price?
Yes.
You just act like a guest. You go, this is how I do it, at least. I go on Airbnb. I just plug in the city, wherever you are. Hopefully it's Denver because it's a cool city. And you look at zoom in on the map wherever your area is, and you just look at like kind properties. You know, what are other places going for in your area? I mean, it's not rocket science. That there are a couple issues you got to be aware of. You don't look at just any place. You want to make sure that you're looking at places similar to yours in size and quality that also have reviews. You know, it's not going to do you any good to price it based off another home that doesn't get any reviews, because that price is bunk. You know, yeah, I mean, that's how I do it. It's pretty, once you get in there and you actually see, you know, what they're charging, then I always drop it by 20%. So I want to undercut the the competition. If you've got a new place and you're just doing this for the first time, you find all the comparables, and whatever that price is that you think that's roughly what I can get, you drop it by 20% because you want to make sure that people choose your place over the other place that already has reviews. Most people are going to choose the place with the reviews. So if your price is the same, you're not going to get somebody. So you bring them in with the lower price. And then once you get a lot of good reviews, that bumps you up in the Airbnb search rankings. And then you start raising your price. And there's no science to it. I mean, you just raise it, $10 each week until you come to a point where the demand starts dropping off. I mean, that's your point. Price point.
It sounds easy to you, but I think for someone who's kind of intimidated or kind of this seems like a big deal that they're doing it, this is really helpful information. So I would like to move forward and talk about Denver specific issues and how each city has responded to having an Airbnb type service in their cities. If you could explain to the listeners some of the specific issues that are specific to Denver, that would be great.
Yeah. So the Denver law, I think, is pretty similar to a lot of the laws that are getting passed around the country. Now, there are some outliers, and we could talk about those if you're interested. But for Denver, it's the biggest issue is that it has to be your primary residence. You can't rent out a second home or an investment property full time. So that's pretty restrictive. You would normally be living in your primary residence, so you can't be renting it out. So you can rent out a room in your place while you're there, or you can rent out your whole place while you're gone on vacation. Or if you're really lucky enough to have a home with a basement apartment or an attic apartment or a carriage house, you can rent those out all day long. And that's kind of something that I do, or I try to find people homes with basement apartments because that's the gold mine. If you've got a place, a separate space, separate entrance, you can rent that out full time. It's still considered your primary residence according to the Denver law. And yeah, I mean, then you've got an Airbnb short-term rental running full time and making a ton of money. There are other provisions besides the primary residence.
Let's talk about the tax. One of the things I found really interesting at the meeting was how people were really trying to figure out how they could avoid paying the tax. And I want to talk about how does Denver know if you're on Airbnb? Like, what are they doing to find their money? Because this is a money issue.
Yeah, it's absolutely a money issue. I would also argue just that the city does feel some obligation to protect the character of the neighborhoods. And that was one of the impetuses behind the law, is that they don't want full-scale hotels, operating in residential districts. And we can talk about the pluses and minuses of that. So how they do it, they're really good. Denver is pretty darn good at finding people. And they're better than other cities. They've got a compliance rate above 60% right now.
Wow.
And cities like San Francisco and Portland, who've passed very similar laws, were just floundering in the 20 to 30% compliance rate for years. What they're doing is they've partnered with some computer software company that I couldn't possibly tell you what the technology is, but they scrape the internet for data, and they find your picture and they find your location and they cross-reference it with other public databases where your information might be, and they pinpoint that this is a short-term rental and it's at this location and it's you who's running it. And if you don't have a license, then they send you a notice of violation.
So
it's pretty good.
I'm kind of impressed with Denver right now and all the ways that are kind of frightening and big brotherish, but is it hard to get a license? Like, is it difficult for Denver people to get a license? And do you think they're not complying because they don't know or they don't care, or it's a mix?
Well, I don't think it's hard. I mean, it's hard if you compare it to just signing up on Airbnb, where they've got a really user-friendly platform. And we're talking about City of Denver. We're talking about a government website, and government websites are inherently not that user-friendly. But that said, I think it's actually a pretty easy process. You have to get your lodger's tax ID first, which is a whole separate online application. And once you have that, then you apply for your short-term rental license. And so I don't know. I mean, like we were just talking about, those compliance rate numbers would say that actually most people are getting a license. The people that aren't, I bet it's because they're operating kind of illegally, maybe. You know, they're operating an investment. They don't want to lose their money, so they don't want to notify the city that they're doing it.
Could you talk about some of the downsides of running an Airbnb? Like, what are the things that just drove you crazy or are just things to look out for someone considering going into this kind of business?
It's a lot of work. It's a ton of work. You're going to be busting your ass if you are doing this for yourself and you're running it completely by yourself. You're cleaning toilets every 3 days. I mean, that's not fun. You're changing sheets and doing laundry. So it's just a ton of work. And it's not just the cleaning. It's also guest management. You've got to be responsive. And they will email you and they'll call you because they need the Wi-Fi code. And they want to know where the nearest cool restaurant is. And so, you know, it's a ton of work. And I would say that's kind of a drawback. But I don't know. I mean, the draw when you balance out everything, money versus drawbacks, I would do it in a heartbeat.
You've changed your business model, and now you're doing slightly longer-term, short-term rentals. Why did you make that shift? It sounds like just because of the workload. But and what would you say about doing what you do now?
I did not choose to shift our model. I didn't do it willingly, I guess. I would love to still be doing Airbnb because the money's so great. But my wife and I own our two rental properties in condo buildings, and HOAs are not friendly to short-term rentals, so they have a minimum rental period of 30 days. Yeah, what we decided to do though is we still furnished our places and we rent them out to traveling nurses and business people who are coming to town for like a month or 2 months at a time. And it's been great. We get about 50% more than we would on a conventional long-term rental. So in that way, you know, we're kind of juicing the rents. It's great. And it's, at least from my point of view, it's a lot less work than Airbnb. Like a lot of people who are doing long-term rentals think I would never do what we're doing, like a three-month rental at a time, because that's a lot of turnover and you got to clean. It's too much of a pain. Well, I'm coming from Airbnb world where I was, you know, scrubbing toilets every 3 days. And now I'm, you know, every 3 months I might have to go in and do some laundry and clean up a place. And so that's easy.
How did you find, like, why nurses? Like, how did you just sit there and kind of brainstorm who could we work with? Like, how did you decide on nurses and business people?
I don't know if I chose nurses. It just seemed like the group that fit what we wanted to do. So I think I kind of came at it backwards. You know, we wanted to get as much rent as we could from a furnished rental. We wanted to do something that was similar to Airbnb in that way. And then we thought about what types of people might want a 3 month stay in a furnished rental. And it just happened to be traveling nurses. So that's how we went about it.
A lot of people don't know that nurses travel. I think what I'm trying to figure out is how did you know that they traveled around? For the person who's like, Eureka, like I had no idea.
Oh, I don't know. I guess I just, I'm tapped into the nursing world or something. I just knew this. Is this not common knowledge that there's such things with travel?
No, it's not common knowledge. Okay. Like, that's why I'm like, pull a teeth. I'm like, no, dude, like people don't know this. Business people, they think of, but nurses, I have an aunt who actually was a pretty humble nurse, but manages medical facilities. So she's like legit. And she travels quite a bit. Yeah, she's managing a lot of these facilities now. And so I know about it because of what she does, but I think the average person would have no clue. So are there other communities of employed people who travel around like this besides hobos?
I don't know. Do hobos pay a lot of money for studio condos in the heart of Capitol Hill?
You're giving me a hard time now.
Okay. Yeah, I am. But you've got all the power. You're asking the questions. I mean, you got to get a little bit sometimes.
I know, right?
Yeah, there are groups. I mean, I think business people in general, you know, the corporate world, occasionally someone's coming in. I think people know about that. What I find interesting is that there are a lot of people. Well, what I find interesting is I think this is specific to Denver and really hot markets, places where people want to live. I'm getting a lot of people who are moving here, but they don't want to buy a place right away because they don't know the place. They don't know Denver. They want to figure out what neighborhood they want to live in. And so they're renting our place. They're staying in it for 2 or 3 months while they look for a permanent place, which is great for me, by the way, because then I can also maybe turn them into a client. And so that's been that's just personally great. That's not really helpful for your fan base here.
But. No, it's good. And how, in terms of clients, what do you mean by that? Do you mean like renters, or do you mean people who learn to do what you do, or all the things?
Oh, so I meant like someone who's coming into town and doesn't want to buy a place right away. They just want to stay in a furnished rental for a couple months. That's a potential buyer for me as a real estate agent.
So you've got the endless funnel going. I know what's going on.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So you went from living in your garden level, which I'm going to be, you know what? My garden level's almost paid off though. Like, I love that little place, but I'm ready to buy a new one. So I'm really excited about that. You're like the third or fourth person I know from Denver who's lived in a garden level. And once you move up, you never go back. Anyway, you're living in this garden level, you stumble on this great business opportunity, you leverage it, you took advantage really of a loophole that wasn't really a loophole until there was an opportunity, a window of opportunity. So I think where I'm going with this is, for someone who maybe they're not wanting to go into Airbnb, but they're looking at opportunities and going into business for themselves, what would you tell them about taking that risk?
I would advise them to do it, for one. I think
But what about being scared?
A walking cliche person. I do believe that life is too short to not try something that you would regret not doing later. But I'm probably not the best person to be giving advice in that way, because my wife and I are a little bit unique in that we don't have kids. And so we don't really have to think about the risks that we're bringing into somebody else's life. It's just us. You know, I've kind of made some mistakes in my life, and I've realized that, you know, there's not really too much you can't come back from. And so I think if you've got a good idea and you've done the research, I think a lot of people get overwhelmed by the immensity of a big step. Even if all the data points are telling them that it's the right one, that it's going to work, that it's going to be profitable. You know, you don't pause when making a choice over a meal. Like, you think about it, PB&J sounds like the right thing, you make the decision because the consequences aren't that high. But I think when you're making a decision in business, you really shouldn't overthink it much more than that. Like, I do the research, I look at the data, it's going to work, let's take this risk.
So we're wrapping up. This has been good. We've had a few technical issues, listeners. I am actually in Breckenridge, and it's unfortunately one of the mountains is on fire right now. So there's things happening, and I'm actually in a shared space, which is why you can hear a little bit background noise. James, could you talk about, just share a little information about your meetup group so that people can come and connect with you at the next meetup group and learn more about what you're doing and your social media?
I teach two classes at Colorado Free University, which I think the website for them is freeu, freeu.com. I teach a class there about how to Airbnb host, how to set up your calendar, how to stage your place, how to take photos, stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
I also teach a first-time home buyers class there. But then I also host these happy hour events, which are way more fun because you get to drink alcohol. I teach this class about the Airbnb laws here in Denver and some other cities along the Front Range. And if you want to find out more information about that, I do have it all on my website. I've got a calendar for the different classes and happy hour events. My website is pretty simple. It's just jamescarlsonrealestate.com. And there's a link on there for that.
And listeners, just so you know, James alluded to this, and we kind of glossed over it. He's a realtor. So if you're looking to purchase, if you're looking to buy in Denver, he is a resource for you. And quite frankly, the market is hot. You need a resource. You can't just go in there willy-nilly. Like, you need someone who knows the different areas and is well-equipped to kind of help you with for what you're hoping to find. It's probably not going to be your dream home. Just going to throw it out there because the market's hot. but James has your back. So James, thank you so much. Hey, the truth is the truth. James, thank you so much. I appreciate your patience with the crazy, the audio, but I think that it's going to be so helpful for the listeners for Girl Gone Frugal Again and Square State and any person who's looking to make extra money via Airbnb. Again, there's a giant fire outside the door that I'm sitting by. I didn't know that there was going to be a fire when I sat down, but that's just how it goes. It's Colorado life. I mean, we have fires. But anyway, thank you so much, James. I wish you lots of money. Great success. I love, love, love what you're doing. And I do wonder one thing. Do you think that there will be a point where, are there plenty of rentals out there? Like, do we need more hosts? Is there still opportunity?
There is absolutely opportunity. So I am something they call an air ambassador. I am kind of connected with Airbnb. And what I'm hearing from Airbnb is that Denver is one of the hottest markets for short-term rentals in the country. And largely maybe because of the rules and regulations, we just do not have enough hosts. So Airbnb is constantly trying to pay me money to pay other people money to start hosting because there's just not enough. There's huge opportunity out there right now.
You guys heard it first. You need some money. You got a little extra bedroom. I live in a garden club, but I might be encouraged to, I don't know. I'm thinking about it now. So James, he's laughing, but I'm serious.
no, go for it. Hey, there's money there.
Got to make that money. So James, thank you so much.